everything Mae Mobley say. Today when I ask what she learned, Mae Mobley just say,
"Nothing,"
and stick her lip out. "How you like your teacher?" I ask her.
"She's pretty,"
she say. "Good," I say. "You pretty too."
"How come you're colored, Abilene?"
Now, I've gotten this question a few times from my other white kids. I used to just laugh, but I want to get this right with her. "'Cause God made me colored," I say, "and there ain't another reason in the world."
"Miss Taylor says kids that are colored can't go to my school 'cause they're not smart enough."
I come round the counter then, lift her chin up and smooth back her funny-looking hair. "You think I'm dumb?"
"No,"
she whispers hard, like she means it so much. She looks sorry she said it. "What'd that tell you about Miss Taylor, then?" She blinked like she listening good. "Means Miss Taylor ain't right all the time," I say. She hugged me round my neck.
"Say, you're righter than Miss Taylor."
I tear up then. My cup is spilling over. Those is new words to me. At 4 o'clock that afternoon, I walk as fast as I can from the bus stop to the Church of the Lamb. I wait inside, watch out the window. After 10 minutes of trying to breathe and drumming my fingers on the sill, I see the car pull up. White lady gets out and I squint my eyes. This lady looks like one of them hippies I seen on Miss Leifold's TV. She got on a short white dress and sandals. Her hair is long, without no spray on it. The weight of it's worked out the curl and frizz. Huh? I laugh into my hand, wishing I could run out there and give her a hug. I ain't been able to see Miss Skeeter in person in 6 months, since we finished Miss Stein's edits and turned in the final copy. Miss Skeeter pulls a big brown box out the back seat, then carries it up to the church door, like she dropping off old clothes. She stop a second and look at the door. But then she get in her car and drive away. I'm sad she had to do it this way, but we don't want to blow it before it even starts. Soon as she gone, I run out and tote the box inside and grab out a copy and I just stare. I don't even try not to cry. Be the prettiest book I ever seen. The cover is a pale blue, color of the sky. And a big white bird, a peace dove, spreads its wings from end to end. The title, Help, is written across the front in black letters in a bold fashion. The only thing that bothers me is the who it be by part. It say by anonymous. I wish Miss Skeeter could have put a name on it, but it was just too much of a risk. Tomorrow I'm gonna take early copies to all the women whose stories we put in. Miss Skeeter gonna carry a copy up to the state pen to Yule May. In a way, she's the reason the other maids even agreed to help. But I hear Yule May probably won't get the box. Them prisoners don't get but 1 out of 10 things sent to 'em, 'cause the lady guards take it for theyselves. Miss Skeeter says she gonna deliver copies 10 more times to make sure. I carry that big box home and take out one copy and put the box under my bed. Then I run over to Minnie's house. Minnie's 6 months pregnant, but you can't even tell yet. When I get there, she's sitting at the kitchen table drinking a glass of milk. Leroy asleep in the back, and Benny and Sugar and Kendra is shelling peanuts in the backyard. The kitchen's quiet. I smile, hand Minnie her copy. She eye it. "I guess the dove bird looks okay." Miss Skeeter say the peace dove be the sign for better times to come. Say folks is wearing them on their clothes out in California. "I don't care about no peoples in California," Minnie say, staring at that cover. "All I care about is what the folks in Jackson, Mississippi got to say about it." Copies gonna show up in the bookstores and the libraries tomorrow. 2,500 in Mississippi. Other half all over the United States. That's a lot more than what Miss Stein told us before. But since the Freedom Ride started and them civil rights workers disappeared in that station wagon here in Mississippi, she say folks is paying more attention to our state.
How many copies going to the White Jackson Library? Minnie asks. Zero?
I shake my head with a smile. Three copies, Miss Skeeter told me on the phone this morning. Even Minnie looks stunned. Just 2 months ago, the White Library started letting colored people in. I've been in twice myself. Minnie opened the book and she started reading it right there. Kids come in and she tell them what to do and how to do it without even looking up. Eyes don't even stop moving across the page. I already done read it many a time, working on it over the past year. But Minnie always said she don't want to read it till it come out in the hardboard. She say she don't want to spoil it. I sat there with Minnie a while. Time to time she grinned. Few times she laughed. And more than once she growled. I don't ask what for. I leave her to it and head home. After I write all my prayers, I go to bed with that book sitting on the pillow next to me. The next day at work, all I can think about is how stores is putting my book on the shelves. I mop, I iron, I change diapers, but I don't hear a word about it in Miss Leafold's house. It's like I ain't even written a book. I don't know what I expected, some kind of stirring, but it's just a regular old hot Friday with flies buzzing on the screen. That night, 6 maids in the book called my house, asking has anybody said anything. We linger on the line like the answer's gonna change if we breathe into the phone long enough. Miss Skeeter called last. I went by the bookworm this afternoon. Stood around a while, but nobody even picked it up. Eula say she went by the colored bookstore. Same thing. All right, she sighed. But all that weekend and then into the next week, we don't hear nothing. The same old book set on Miss Leafold's nightstand, Francis Benton's Etiquette, Peyton Place. That old dusty Bible she keep by the bed for show. But law, if I don't keep glancing at that stack like a stain. By Wednesday, they still ain't even a ripple in the water. Not one person's bought a copy in the white bookstore. The Ferris Street store say they done sold about a dozen, which is good. Might have just been the other maids, though, buying for their friends. On Thursday, day 7, before I even left for work, my phone rang. I've got news, Miss Skeeter whispered. I reckon she must be locked up in the pantry again. What happened? Mrs. Stein called and said we're going to be on the Dennis James show. People Will Talk? The TV show? Our book made the book review. She said it'll be on Channel 3 next Thursday at 1 o'clock. Law, we're going to be on WLBT-TV. It's a local Jackson show, and it come on in color right after the 12 o'clock news. You think the review going to be good or bad? I don't know. I don't even know if Dennis reads the books or just says what they tell him to. I feel excited and scared at the same time. Something got to happen after that. Mrs. Stein said somebody must have felt sorry for us in the Harper and Row publicity department and made some calls. She said we're the first book she's handled with a publicity budget of zero. We laugh, but we both sound nervous. I hope you get to watch it at Elizabeth's. If you can't, I'll call you and tell you everything they said. On Friday night, a week after the book come out, I get ready to go to the church. Deacon Thomas called me this morning and asked would I come to a special meeting they having. But when I ask what about, he get all in a hurry and say he got to go. Minnie say she got the same thing. So I iron up a nice linen dress of Miss Greenlee's and head to Minnie's house. We gonna walk there together. As usual, Minnie's house be like a chicken coop on fire. Minnie be hollering, things be flinging around, all the kids squawking. I see the first hint of Minnie's belly under her dress, and I'm grateful she finally showing. Leroy, he don't hit Minnie when she pregnant. And Minnie know this, so I expect there's gonna be a lot more babies after this one.
Kendra! Get your butt off that floor! Minnie holler. Them beans better be hot when your daddy wakes up.
Kendra, she's 7 now. She sass walk her way to the stove with her bottom sticking out and her nose up in the air. Pans go banging all over the place.
Why I got to do dinner? It's Sugar's turn. 'Cause Sugar at Miss Celia's, and you want to live to see 3rd grade.
Benny come in and squeeze me round the middle. He grin and show me the tooth he got missing, then run off.
Kendra, turn that flame down before you burn the house down.
We better go, Minnie, I say, 'cause this could go on all night. We gonna be late. Minnie look at her watch, shake her head.
Why Sugar ain't home yet? Miss Celia ain't never kept me this late.
Last week, Minnie started bringing Sugar to work. She getting her trained for when Minnie have her baby, and Sugar gonna have to fill in for her. Tonight, Miss Celia asked Sugar to work late, say she drive her home.
Kendra, I don't want to see so much as a bean sitting in that sink when I get back. Clean up good now.
Minnie give her a hug.
Benny, go tell Daddy he better get his fool self out of that bed. Oh, Mama, why I got... Go on, be brave. Just don't stand too close when he come to.
We make it out the door and down to the street before we hear Leroy hollering at Benny for waking him up. I walk faster so she don't go back and give Leroy what he good for. Glad we going to church tonight, Minnie sigh. We round Ferris Street, start up the steps.
Give me an hour of not thinking about it all.
Soon as we step in the church foyer, one of the Brown brothers slipped behind us and he locked the door.
I'm about to ask why woulda got scared if I had the time, but then the 30-odd peoples in the room start clapping. Minnie and me start clapping with them. Figure somebody got into college or something.
Who we clapping for? I asked Rachel Johnson. She the reverend wife. She laugh and it get quiet. Rachel lean in to me.
Honey, we clapping for you.
Then she reached down and pull a copy of the book out of her purse. I look around and now everybody got a copy in their hands. All the important officers and church deacons are there. Reverend Johnson come up to me then. Abilene, this is an important time for you and our church.
You must have cleaned out the bookstore, I say.
And the crowd laugh real polite like. We want you to know, for your safety, this will be the only time the church recognizes you for your achievement. I know a lot of folks helped with this book, but I heard it couldn't have been done without you. I look over at Minnie smiling, and I know she in on it too. A quiet message has been sent throughout the congregation and all of the community that if anyone knows who's in the book or who wrote it, it's not to be discussed, except for tonight. I'm sorry. He smiles, shake his head. But we just couldn't let this go by without some kind of celebration. He hand me the book. We know you couldn't put your name in it, so we all signed our own for you. I open up the front cover and there is. Not 30 or 40 names, but hundreds, maybe 500. In the front pages, the back pages, along the rim of the inside pages. All the peoples in my church, and folks from other churches, too.
Oh, I just break down then.
It's like 2 years of doing and trying and hoping all come out at once. Then everybody get in line and come by and hug me. Tell me I'm brave. I tell them there are so many others that are brave, too. I hate to hog all the attention, but I am so grateful they don't mention no other names. I don't want them in trouble. I don't think they even know Minnie's in there. There may be some hard times ahead, Reverend Johnson say to me. If it comes to that, the church will help you in every way. I cry and cry right there in front of everybody. I look over at Minnie and she laughing. Funny how people show their feelings in different ways. I wonder what Miss Skeeter would do if she was here,
and it kind of makes me sad. I know ain't nobody in town gonna sign a book for her and tell her she brave. Ain't nobody gonna tell her they look after her. Then the Reverend hands me a box wrapped in white paper, tied with light blue ribbon, same colors as the book. He lays his hand on it as a blessing. This one, this is for the white lady. You tell her we love her like she's our own family. On Thursday, I wake up with the sun and go to work early. Today's a big day. I get my kitchen work done fast. 1 o'clock come, and I make sure I got my ironing all set up in front of Miss Lee Foth's TV. Tuned to Channel 3. Lil' Man taking his nap and May Mobley at school. I try and iron some pleats, but my hands are shaking and they come out all crooked. I spray it wet and start all over, fussing and frowning. Finally, the time comes. In the box pops Dennis James. He start telling us what we gonna discuss today. His black hair is sprayed down so heavy it don't even move. He is the fastest-talking Southern man I ever heard. Make me feel like I'm on a roller coaster way he make his voice go. I'm so nervous, I feel like I'm gonna throw up right here on Mr. Raleigh's church suit. And we'll end the show with a book review. After the commercial, he'll do something on Elvis Presley's Jungle Room. Then he'd do a piece on the new Interstate 55 they gonna build, going through Jackson all the way to New Orleans. Then, at 1:22 p.m., a woman come set next to him by the name of Jolene French. She says she the local book reviewer. That very second, Miss Lee Foth walk in the house. She all dressed up in her league outfit and her noisy high heels, and she heads straight for the living room. "I am so glad that heat wave is over, I could jump for joy," she say. Mr. Dennis chatting about some book called Little Big Man. I try to agree with her, but I feel real stiff in the face all of a sudden. I'll just turn this thing off. "No, keep it on," say Miss Leifold. "That's Jolene French on the television set. I better call Hilly and tell her." She clumped to the kitchen and get on the phone with Miss Hilly's third maid in a month. Ernestine ain't got but one arm. Miss Hilly Pickens getting slim. "Ernestine, this is Miss Elizabeth." "Oh, she's not? Well, you tell her the minute she walks in that our sorority sister is on the television set." "That's right. Thank you." Miss Lee Foth rushed back in the living room and sat on the sofa. But it's a commercial on. I get to breathing hard. What is she doing? We ain't never watched the TV together before. And here are all day she front and center like she be watching herself on screen. All of a sudden the dial soap commercial over, and there be Mr. Dennis with my book in his hand. White Bird looked bigger than life. He holding it up and poking his finger at the word anonymous. For 2 seconds I'm more proud than I is scared. I want to yell, "That's my book! That's my book on the TV!" But I got to keep still, like I'm watching something humdrum. I can't barely breathe. "Called help, with testimonies from some of Mississippi's very own housekeepers." "Oh, I wish Hilly was home. Who can I tell? Look at those cute shoes she's got on. I bet she got those at the Papa Gallo shop." Please shut up. I reach down and turn it up a little. But then I wish I hadn't. What if they talk about her? Would Miss Lee Foth even recognize her own life? "Read it last night and now my wife is reading it." Mr. Dennis talking like an auction man, laughing, eyebrows going up and down, pointing at our book. "And it truly is touching, enlightening, I'd say. And they use the made-up town of Niceville, Mississippi, but who knows?" He halfway cover his mouth, whisper real loud, "It could be Jackson."
"Say what?"
"Now, I'm not saying it is. It could be anywhere. But just in case you need to get this book and make sure you aren't in it." I freeze, feel a tangle on my neck. "Ain't nothing in there, say Jackson." "Tell me again, it could be anywhere, Mr. Dennis." I see Miss Leifold smiling at her friend on the TV like the fool can see her.
Mr. Dennis be laughing and talking, but that sorority sister, Miss Jolene, got a face on red as a stop sign.
A disgrace to the South. A disgrace to the good Southern women who spent their lives taking care of their help. I know I personally treat my help like family, and every one of my friends does the same. Why is she frowning like that on TV? Miss Lee Folt whined at the box. Jolene! She leaned forward and tap her finger on Miss Jolene's forehead. Don't frown! You don't look cute that way. Jolene, did you read that ending about the pie? If my maid Bessie May is out there listening, Bessie May, I have a new respect for what you do every day. And I'll pass on the chocolate pie from now on. Ha 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 ha! But Miss Jolene holding up the book like she want to burn it. Do not buy this book, ladies of Jackson. Do not support this slander with your husband's hard-earned... Huh? Miss Leafold asked Mr. Dennis. And then, poof, we on to a Tide commercial. What were they talking about? Miss Leafold asked me. I don't answer. My heart's pounding. My friend Jolene had a book in her hand. Yes, ma'am. What was it called? Help or something like that? I pressed the iron point down in the collar of Mr. Raleigh's shirt. I got to call Minnie. Miss Skeeter found out if they heard this. But Miss Leafold's standing there waiting for my answer. I know she ain't gonna let up. She never do. Did I hear them say it was about Jackson? She say. I keep right on staring at my iron. I think they said Jackson. But why don't they want us to buy it? My hands are shaking. How can this be happening? I keep ironing, trying to make what's beyond wrinkled smooth. A second later, the Tide commercial's over, and there's Dennis James again holding up the book and Miss Jolene still all red in the face. That's all for today, he say. But y'all be sure and pick up your copy of Little Big Man and Help from our sponsor, the State Street Bookstore, and see for yourself. Is it or is it not about Jackson? And then the music come on and he holler, Good day, Mississippi! Miss Leafold look at me and say, See that? I told you they said it was about Jackson. And 5 minutes later she off to the bookstore to buy herself a copy of what I done wrote about her.
Minnie, Chapter 30. After the People Will Talk show, I grab the space command and punch the off button. My stories are about to come on, but I don't even care. Dr. Strong and Miss Julia will just have to turn the world without me today. I have a mind to call that Dennis James on the phone and say, Who do you think you are spreading lies like that? You can't tell the whole metro area our book is about Jackson. You don't know what town we've written our book about. I'll tell you what that fool's doing. He's wishing it was about Jackson. He's wishing Jackson, Mississippi was interesting enough to write a whole book on, even though it is Jackson. Well, he doesn't know that. I rush to the kitchen and call Abilene, but after two tries, the line's still busy. I hang up. In the living room, I flip on the iron, yank Mr. Johnny's white shirt out of the basket. I wonder for the millionth time what's going to happen when Miss Hiller reads the last chapter. She better get to work soon telling people it's not our town. And she can tell Miss Celia to fire me all afternoon, and Miss Celia won't. Hating Miss Hill is the only thing that crazy woman and I have in common. But what Hilly'll do once that fails, I don't know. That'll be our own war between me and Miss Hilly. That won't affect the others. Oh, now I'm in a bad mood. From where I'm ironing, I can see Miss Celia in the backyard in a pair of hoochie pink satin pants and black plastic gloves. She's got dirt all over her knees. I've asked her 100 times to quit digging dirt in her dress-up clothes, but that lady never listens. The grass in front of the pool is covered in yard rakes and hand tools. All Miss Celia does now is hoe up the yard and plant more fancy flowers. Never mind that Mr. Johnny hired a full-time yard man a few months ago named John Willis. He was hoping he'd be some kind of protection after the naked man showed up. But he's so old, he bent up like a paperclip. Skinny as one, too. I feel like I have to check on him just to make sure he hasn't stroked in the bushes. I guess Mr. Johnny didn't have the heart to send him home for somebody younger. I spray some more starch on Mr. Johnny's collar. I hear Miss Celia hollering instructions on how to plant a bush.
Those hydrangeas? Let's get us some more iron in the dirt, okay, John Willis?
Yes'm, John Willis hollered back. Shut up, lady, I say. The way she hollers at him, he thinks she's the deaf one. The phone rings, and I run for it. Oh, Minnie, Abilene says on the phone. They figure out the town. Ain't no time for they figure out the people. He a fool is what he is. How we know Miss Hill even gonna read it, Abilene says, her voice turning high. I hope Miss Leafo can't hear. Lord, we should have thought this through, Minnie. I've never heard Abilene like this. It's like she's me and I'm her. Listen, I say, because something's starting to make sense here. Since Mr. James done made such a stink about it, we know she gonna read it. Everybody in town gonna read it now. Even as I'm saying it, I'm starting to realize it's true. Don't cry yet, because maybe things is happening just the way they should. 5 minutes after I hang it up, Miss Celia's phone rings. Miss Celia's I just talked to Lavinia, Abilene whispered. Miss Lou Ann just come in with a copy for herself and a copy for her best friend, Hilly Holbrook. Here we go. All night long, I swear I can feel Miss Hilly reading our book. I can hear the words she's reading, whispering in my head, in her cool, white voice. At 2 a.m., I get up from the bed and open my own copy and try to guess what chapter she's on. Is it 1 or 2 or 10? Finally, I just stare at the blue cover. I've never seen a book such a nice color. I wipe a smudge off the front. Then I hide it back in the pocket of my winter coat I've never worn, since I've read 0 books after I married Leroy, and I don't want to make him suspicious with this one. I finally go back to bed, telling myself there's no way I can guess how far Miss Hill has read. I do know, though, she hasn't gotten to her part at the end. I know because I haven't heard the screaming in my head yet. By morning, I swear I'm glad to be going to work. It's flow scrubbing day, and I want to get my mind off it all. I heave myself into the car and drive out to Madison County. Miss C went to see another doctor yesterday afternoon to find out about having kids, and I about told her, you can have this one, lady. I'm sure she'll tell me every last detail about it today. At least the fool had the sense to quit Dr. Tate. I pull up to the house. I get to park in front now since Miss Celia finally dropped the ruse and told Mr. Johnny what he already knew. The first thing I see is Mr. Johnny's truck still home. I wait in my car. He's never once been here when I come in. I step into the kitchen. I stand in the middle and look. Somebody already made coffee. I hear a man's voice in the dining room. Something's going on here. I lean close to the door, and I hear Mr. Johnny, home on a weekday at 8:30 in the morning, and a voice in my head says, run right back out the door. Miss Hilly called and told him I was a thief. He found out about the pie. He knows about the book. Minnie? I hear Miss Celia call. Real careful. I push the swinging door, peek out. There's Miss Celia sitting at the head of the table with Mr. Johnny sitting next to her. They both look up at me. Mr. Johnny looks whiter than that old albino man that lives behind Miss Walters. Minnie, bring me a glass of water, please, he says, and I get a real bad feeling. I get him the water and take it to him. When I set the glass down on the napkin, Mr. Johnny stand up. He gives me a long, heavy look. Lord, here it comes. I told him about the baby, Miss Celia whispers. All the babies. Minnie, I would have lost her if it hadn't been for you, he says, grabbing hold of my hands. Thank God you were here. I look over at Miss Celia, and she looks dead in the eyes. I already know what the doctor told her. I can see it, that there won't be any babies born alive. Mr. Johnny squeezes my hands. Then he goes to her. He gets down on his kneecaps and lays his head down in her lap. She smooths his hair over and over.
Don't leave. Don't ever leave me, Celia, he cries. Tell her, Johnny. Tell Benny what you said to me.
Mr. Johnny lifts his head. His hair all mussed, and he looks up at me. You'll always have a job here with us, Minnie, for the rest of your life if you won't. Thank you, sir. I say, and I mean it. Those are the best words I could hear today. I reach for the dough, but Miss Celia says real soft. Stay in here a while, will you, Minnie? So I lean my hand on the sideboard because the baby's getting heavy on me. And I wonder how it is that I have so much when she doesn't have any. He's crying, she's crying. We are three fools in the dining room crying.
I'm telling you, I tell Leroy in the kitchen 2 days later, you punch the button and the channel change and you don't even have to get up from your chair.
Leroy's eyes don't move from his paper.
That don't make no sense, Minnie.
Miss Celia, you got it. Call Space Command. A box about half the size of a bread loaf.
Leroy shakes his head.
Lazy white people. Can't even get up to turn a knob.
I reckon people gonna be flying to the moon pretty soon, I say. I'm not even listening to what's coming out of my mouth. I'm listening for the scream again. When is that lady gonna finish?
What's for supper? Leroy says.
Yeah, Mama, when we gonna eat?
Kendra says. I hear a car pull in the driveway. I listen, and the spoon slips into the pot of beans.
Cream of wheat?
I ain't eating no cream of wheat for supper, Leroy says.
I had that for breakfast, Kendra cries. I mean ham and beans.
I go slam the back door and turn the latch. I look out the window again. The car's backing out. It was just turning around. Leroy gets up and flings the back door open again.
It's hot as hell in here.
He comes to the stove where I'm standing.
What's wrong with you?
He asks about an inch from my face.
Nothing.
I say and move back a little. Usually, he don't mess with me when I'm pregnant. But he moves closer. He squeezes my arm hard.
What did you do this time?
I didn't do nothing, I say. I'm just tired.
He tightens his grip on my arm. It's starting to burn.
You don't get tired. Not till the 10th month.
I didn't do nothing, Leroy. Just go and sit and let me get to supper.
He lets go, giving me a long look. I can't meet his eyes.
Abilene, Chapter 31. Every time Miss Lee Folk go out shopping or in the yard or even to the bathroom, I check her bedside table where she put the book. I act like I'm dusting, but what I really be doing is checking to see if that First Presbyterian Bible bookmark's moved any deeper in the pages. She's been reading it for 5 days now, and I flip it open today and she's still on chapter 1, page 14. She got 235 pages left. Law, she reads slow. Still, I want to tell her, you reading about Miss Skeeter, don't you know? About her growing up with Constantine. And I'm scared to death, but I want to tell her, keep reading, lady, because chapter 2 gonna be about you. I'm nervous as a cat seeing that book in her house. All week long, I've been tiptoeing around. One time, little man come up from behind and touch me on the leg, and I near about jump off my work shoes. Especially on Thursday when Miss Hilly come over. They sit at the dining room table and work on the benefit. Every once in a while, they look up and smile, ask me to fetch a mayonnaise sandwich or some iced tea. Twice, Miss Hilly come in the kitchen and call her maid, Ernestine. Are you done soaking Heather's smock dress like I told you to? Uh-huh. And have you dusted the half-tester canopy?
Oh, you haven't? Well, go on and do that right away.
I go in to collect their plates and I hear Miss Hilly say, I'm up to chapter 7. And I freeze, the plates in my hand clattering. Miss Leafolt look up and wrinkle her nose at me. But Miss Hilly, she's shaking a finger at Miss Leafolt. And I think they're right. It just feels like Jackson.
You do?
Miss Leafolt asked. Miss Hilly leaned down and whispered, I bet we even know some of these Negro maids.
You really think so?
Miss Leafolt asked, and my body go cold. I can barely move a foot toward the kitchen.
I've only read a little.
I do. And you know what? Miss Hilly smiled real sneaky-like. I'm going to figure out every last one of these people. The next morning, I'm near about hyperventilating at the bus stop, thinking about what Miss Hilly gonna do when she get to her part, wondering if Miss Leafolt done read chapter 2 yet. And when I walk in her house, there Miss Leafolt is reading my book at the kitchen table. She hand me Little Man from her lap without even taking her eyes off the page. Then she wander off to the back, reading and walking at the same time. All of a sudden, she can't get enough of it now that Miss Hilly done taken her interest in it. Few minutes later, I go back to her bedroom to get the dirty clothes. Miss Leafolt's in the bathroom, so I open the book at the bookmark. She already on chapter 6. Winnie's chapter. This where the white lady get the old-timer disease and call the police department every morning 'cause a colored woman just walked in her house. That means Miss Leafolt read her part and just kept on going. I'm scared, but I can't help but roll my eyes. I bet Miss Leafolt ain't got no idea it'd be about herself. I mean, thank the Lord, but still. She probably shaking her head in bed last night reading about this awful woman who don't know how to love her own child. Soon as Miss Leafolt go to her hair appointment, I call Minnie. All we do lately is run up our white lady's phone bill. You heard anything? I ask.
No, nothing. Miss Leafolt finished yet? She asks.
No, but she made it to Winnie last night. Miss Celia still ain't bought a copy.
That lady don't look at nothing but trash.
I'm coming!
Minnie holler.
The fool stuck in the hairdryer hood again. I told her not to put her head in there when she got them big rollers in.
Call me if you hear anything, I say.
I do the same.
Something's gonna happen soon, Abilene. It's got to.
That afternoon, I stomp up to the jitney to pick up some fruit and cottage cheese for May Mobley. That Miss Taylor done it again. Baby girl get out the carpool today, walk straight to her room, and throwed herself on her bed.
What's wrong, baby? What happened?
I colored myself black, she cried.
What you mean? I asked. With the markers you did?
I picked up her hand, but she didn't have no ink on her skin.
Miss Taylor said to draw what we like about ourselves best.
I saw then a wrinkled, sad-looking paper in her hand. I turned it over, and sure enough, there's my baby white girl, done colored herself black.
She said black means I got a dirty, bad face.
She planted her face in her pillow and cried something awful.
Miss Taylor, after all the time I spent teaching May Mobley how to love all people, not judge by color, I feel a hard fist in my chest because what person out there don't remember their first grade teacher? Maybe they don't remember what they learned, but I'm telling you, I done raised enough kids to know they matter.
At least the jitney's cool. I feel bad I forgot to buy May Mobley a snack this morning. I hurry so she won't have to sit with her mama for too long. She done hid her paper under her bed so her mama wouldn't see it. In the canned food section, I get 2 cans of tuna fish. I walk over to find the green jello powder. And there's sweet Luvinia in her white uniform looking at peanut butter. I'll think of Luvinia as chapter 7 for the rest of my life. How's Robert doing? I ask, patting her arm.
Lavinia work all day for Miss Luann and then come home every afternoon and take Robert to blind school so he can learn to read with his fingers. And I have never heard Lavinia complain once.
Learning to get around, she nod. You all right? Feel okay?
Just nervous. You heard anything at all? She shake her head.
My boss been reading it, though.
Miss Luann's in Miss Leafolt's bridge club. Miss Luann was real good to Lavinia when Robert got hurt. We walk down the aisle with our hand baskets. There'd be two white ladies talking by the graham crackers. They're kind of familiar looking, but I don't know their names. Soon as we get close, they hush up and look at us. Funny how they ain't smiling.
Excuse me, I say and move on past.
When we not but a foot away, I hear one say, "That's the nigger waits on Elizabeth." A cart rattles past us, blocking the words.
"I bet you're right,"
the other one say. "I bet that's her." Me and Lavinia keep walking real quiet, looking dead ahead. I feel prickles up my neck, hearing the lady's heels clack away. I know Lavinia heard better than I did, 'cause her ears is 10 years younger than mine. At the end of the aisle, we start to go in different directions, but then we both turn to look at each other.
"Did I hear right?"
I say with my eyes.
"You heard right,"
Lavinia say back. "Please, Miss Hilly, read. Read like the wind."
Minnie, Chapter 32. Another day passes, and I can still hear Miss Hilly's voice talking the words, reading the lines. I don't hear the scream. Not yet, but she's getting close. Abilene told me what the ladies in the jitney said yesterday, but we haven't heard another thing since. I keep dropping things. Broke my last measuring cup tonight, and Leroy's eyeing me like he knows. Right now, he's drinking coffee at the table, and the kids are draped all over the kitchen doing the homework. I jump when I see Abilene standing at the screen door. She puts her finger to her lips and nods to me. Then she disappears. "Kendra, get the plates. Sugar, watch the beans. Felicia, get Dad to sign that test. Mama needs some air." Poof. I disappear out the screen door. Abilene's standing on the side of the house in her white uniform. "What happened?" I ask. Inside, I hear Leroy yell, "A F!" He won't touch the kids. He'll yell, but that's what fathers are supposed to do. One arm, Ernestine call and say Miss Hill is talking all over town who's in the book. She's telling white ladies to fire their maids, and she ain't even guessing the right ones. Abilene's so upset she's shaking. She's twisting a cloth into a white rope. I'll bet she doesn't even realize she carried over a real dinner napkin. "Who's she saying?" "She told Miss Sinclair to fire Annabelle. So Miss Sinclair fired her and then took her car keys away 'cause she loaned her half the money to buy the car. Annabelle already paid most of it back, but it's gone." "That witch," I whisper, grinding my teeth. "That ain't all, Minnie." I hear footsteps in the kitchen. "Hurry, before Leroy catch us whispering." "Miss Hilly told Miss Luann, 'Yo, Lavinia's in here. I know she is, and you need to fire her. You ought to send that nigger to jail.'" "But Lavinia didn't say a single bad thing about Miss Luann," I say. "And she got Robert to take care of. What Miss Luann say?" Abilene bites her lip. She shakes her head, and the tears come down her face. "She say she gonna think about it." "Which one, the firing or the jail?" Abilene shrugged. "Both, I reckon." "Jesus Christ," I say, wanting to kick something, somebody. "Minnie, what if Miss Hilly don't ever finish reading it?" "I don't know, Abilene. I just don't know." Abilene's eyes jerk up to the door, and there's Leroy, watching us from behind the screen. He stands there, quiet, until I tell Abilene goodbye and come back inside. At 5:30 that morning, Leroy falls in the bed next to me. I wake up to the squawk of the frame and the stench of the liquor. I grip my teeth, praying he doesn't try to start a fight. I'm too tired for it. Not that I was asleep good anyway, worrying about Abilene and her news. For Miss Hilly, Lavinia would just be another jail key on that witch's belt. Leroy flops around and tosses and turns, never mind his pregnant wife's trying to sleep. When the fool finally gets settled, I hear his whisper. What's the big secret, Minnie? I can feel him watching me, feel his liquor breath on my shoulder. I don't move. You know I'll find out, he hisses. I always do. In about 10 seconds, his breathing slows to almost dead, and he throws his hand across me. Thank you for this baby, I pray, because that's the only thing that saved me, this baby in my belly, and that is the ugly truth. I lay there grinding my teeth, wondering, worrying. Leroy, he's on to something, and God knows what'll happen to me if he finds out. He knows about the book. Everybody does. Just not that his wife was a part of it. Thank you. People probably assume I don't care if he finds out. Oh, I know what people think. They think, big, strong Minnie, she sure can stand up for herself. But they don't know what a pathetic mess I turn into when Leroy's beating on me. I'm afraid to hit back. I'm afraid he'll leave me if I do. I know it makes no sense, and I get so mad at myself for being so weak. How can I love a man who beats me raw? Why do I love a fool drinker? One time I asked him, why? Why are you hitting me? He leaned down and looked me right in the face. If I didn't hit you, Minnie, who knows what you become? I was trapped in the corner of the bedroom like a dog. He was beating me with his belt. It was the first time I'd ever really thought about it. Who knows what I could become if Leroy would stop goddamn hitting me? The next night, I make everybody go to bed early, including myself. Leroy is at the plant until 5, and I'm feeling too heavy for my time. Lord, maybe it's twins. I'm not paying a doctor to tell me that bad news. All I know is this baby's already bigger than the other ones when they came out, and I'm only 6 months. I fall into a heavy sleep. I'm dreaming. I'm at a long wooden table, and I'm at a feast. I'm gnawing on a big roasted turkey leg. I fly upright in my bed. My breath is fast. Who there? My heart's flinging itself against my chest. I look around my dark bedroom. It's 12:30. Leroy's not here, thank God. But something woke me for sure. And then I realized what it was that woke me. I heard what I've been waiting on. What we've all been waiting on. I heard Miss Hilly's scream.
Miss Skeeter, Chapter 33. My eyes pop open. My chest is pumping. I'm sweating. The green vined wallpaper is snaking up the walls. What woke me? What was that? I get out of bed and listen. It didn't sound like Mother. It was too high-pitched. It was a scream, like material ripping into two shredded pieces. I sit back on the bed and press my hand to my heart. It's still pounding. Nothing is going as planned. People know the book is about Jackson. I can't believe I forgot what a slow goddamn reader Hilly is. I'll bet she's telling people she's read more than she has. Now things are spinning out of control. A maid named Annabelle was fired. White women are whispering about Abilene and Luvinia and who knows who else. And the irony is, I'm gnawing my hands waiting for Hilly to speak up when I'm the only one in this town who doesn't care what she has to say anymore. What if the book was a horrible mistake? I take a deep, painful breath. I try to think of the future, not the present. A month ago, I mailed out 15 resumes to Dallas, Memphis, Birmingham, and 5 other cities, and once again, New York. Mrs. Stein told me I could list her as a reference, which is probably the only notable thing on the page, having a recommendation from someone in publishing. I added the jobs I've held for the past year. Weekly housekeeping columnist for the Jackson Journal newspaper, editor of the Junior League of Jackson newsletter, author of Help, a controversial book about colored housekeepers and their white employers, Harper and Row. I didn't really include the book. I just wanted to type it out once. But now, even if I did get a job offer in a big city, I can't abandon Abilene in the middle of this mess. Not with things going so badly. But God, I have to get out of Mississippi. Besides Mother and Daddy, I have nothing left here. No friends, no job I really care about, no Stuart. But it's not just out of here. When I addressed my resume to the New York Post, the New York Times, Harper's Magazine, the New Yorker Magazine, I felt that surge again. The same I'd felt in college, of how much I want to be there. Not Dallas, not Memphis, New York City, where writers are supposed to live. But I've heard nothing back from any of them. What if I never leave? What if I'm stuck, here, forever? I lie down and watch the first rays of sun coming through the window. I shiver. That ripping scream, I realize, was me. I'm standing in Brent's drugstore picking out Mother's Luster Cream and a Vinolia soap bar while Mr. Roberts works on her prescription. Mother says she doesn't need the medicine anymore, that the only cure for cancer is having a daughter who won't cut her hair and wears dresses too high above the knee even on Sunday, because who knows what tackiness I'd do to myself if she died. I'm just grateful Mother's better. If my 15-second engagement to Stuart is what spurred Mother's will to live, the fact that I'm single again fueled her strength even more. She was clearly disappointed by our breakup, but then bounced back superbly. Mother even went so far as to set me up with a third cousin removed, who was 35 and beautiful and clearly homosexual. Mother, I'd said when he left after supper, for how could she not see it? He's... But I'd stopped. I'd patted her hand instead. He said I wasn't his type. Now I'm hurrying to get out of the drugstore before anyone I know comes in. I should be used to my isolation by now, but I'm not. I miss having friends. Not Hilly, but sometimes Elizabeth. The old, sweet Elizabeth back in high school. It got harder when I finished the book, and I couldn't even visit Abilene anymore. We decided it was too risky. I miss going to her house and talking to her more than anything. Every few days, I speak to Abilene on the phone, but it's not the same as sitting with her. Please, I think when she updates me on what's going on around town. Please let some good come out of this. But so far, nothing. Just girls gossiping and treating the book like a game, trying to guess who is who and Hilly accusing the wrong people. I was the one who assured the colored maids we wouldn't be found out, and I am the one responsible for this. The front bell tinkles. I look over and in walk Elizabeth and Luann Templeton. I slip back into beauty creams, hoping they don't see me. But then I peek over the shelves to look. They're heading for the lunch counter, huddled together like schoolgirls. Luann's wearing her usual long sleeves in the summer heat and her constant smile. I wonder if she knows she's in the book. Elizabeth's got her hair poofed up in front, and she's covered the back in a scarf. the yellow scarf I gave her for her 23rd birthday. I stand there a minute, letting myself feel how strange this all is, watching them, knowing what I know. She has read up to chapter 10, Abilene told me last night, and still doesn't have the faintest idea that she's reading about herself and her friends. Skeeter, Mr. Roberts calls out from his landing above the register. Your mama's medicine's ready. I walk to the front of the store and have to pass Elizabeth and Luann at the lunch counter. They keep their backs to me, but I can see their eyes in the mirror following me. They look down at the same time. I pay for the medicine in Mother's tubes and goo and work my way back through the aisles. As I try to escape along the far side of the store, Luann Templeton steps from behind the hairbrush rack. Skeeter, she says, you have a minute. I stand there blinking, surprised. No one's asked me for even a second, much less a minute, in over 8 months. Sure, I say, wary. Luann glances out the window, and I see Elizabeth heading for her car, a milkshake in hand. Luann motions me closer, by the shampoos and detanglers. Yo mama, I hope she's still doing better? Luann asks. Her smile is not quite as beaming as usual. She pulls at the long sleeves of her dress, even though a fine sweat covers her forehead. She's fine, still in remission. I'm so glad. She nods and we stand there awkwardly, looking at each other. Luann takes a deep breath. I know we haven't talked in a while, but... She lowers her voice. I just thought you should know what Hilly's saying. She's saying you wrote that book about the maids. I heard that book was written anonymously, is my quick answer. Not sure I even want to act like I've read it. Even though everyone in town's reading it. All three bookstores are sold out, and the library has a 2-month waiting list. She holds up her palm like a stop sign. I don't want to know if it's true, but Hilly... She steps closer to me. Hilly Holbrook called me the other day and told me to fire my maid, Luvenia. Her jaw tightens and she shakes her head. Please, I hold my breath. Please don't say you fired her. Skeeter. Luvenia. Luann looks me in the eye, says, she's the only reason I can get out of bed sometimes. I don't say anything. Maybe this is a trap Hilly's set. And I'm sure you think I'm just some dumb girl. That I agree with everything Hilly says. Tears come up in her eyes. Her lips are trembling. The doctors want me to go up to Memphis for shock treatment. She covers her face, but a tear slips through her fingers. For the depression and the tries, she whispers. I look down at her long sleeves and I wonder if that's what she's been hiding. I hope I'm not right, but I shudder. Of course, Henry says I need to shape up or ship out. She makes a marching motion, trying to smile, but it falls quickly and the sadness flickers back into her face. Skeeter. Luvenia is the bravest person I know. Even with all her own troubles, she sits down and talks to me. She helps me get through my days. When I read what she wrote about me, about helping her with her grandson, I've never been so grateful in my life. It was the best I'd felt in months. I don't know what to say. This is the only good thing I've heard about the book, and I want her to tell me more. I guess Abilene hasn't heard this yet either. But I'm worried, too, because clearly, Luann knows. If you did write it, if Hilly's rumor is true, I just want you to know I will never fire.